Hey, Mets fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. Happy belated Thanksgiving to our American listeners. Happy Black Friday to our capitalist pig listeners. And it's not even that funny, but it made me laugh because I'm a stupid idiot. We are here to recap the last couple weeks of Mets news, and there really isn't all that much to talk about. I want to start with the Mets non-tendering both Sean Reed Foley and Dominic Smith. I don't think either of these would be considered shocking news for anyone listening to this podcast. But I think both of them sort of represent, I think they're very different non-tenders. I think Sean Reed Foley coming back under a minor league deal is something that I could absolutely see happening because, you know, this is a situation where he was hurt and he's getting more expensive. And so you non-tender him and you maybe bring him back under a minor league deal. Especially the Mets seem to be stockpiling sort of fringe arms, which we'll talk about in a little while. But the Dom Smith one just feels like there's a combination of things at play here. He doesn't have a natural position in the Mets organization because the Mets have first base locked up. They also have a lefty DH in Daniel Vogelbach, who has much more success as of late in that role than Dom Smith does. The outfield experiment for Dom Smith was an abject failure in just about every way. And it just seems like this is the classic change of scenery need that the Mets are allowing him to do. That said, of all of the players the Mets have not brought back in recent years in similar situations, I think that Dom Smith has the most likely shot at being a Justin Turner someplace else, which is putting it together outside of the Mets for whatever reason. I'm not saying that's necessarily on the Mets or on Dom. I just think that the combination of his hit tool and the amount of bad luck that he's had as a Met, I wouldn't be shocked if he puts it together someplace else. Do you have a similar feeling about Dom, or do you think Dom is just toast at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think he peaked as a major league player, and it sucks to say that because he was an easy guy to root for a variety of reasons. The Cookie Club, much more importantly, being willing to speak out in the summer of 2020 about his experience with racism in the United States, something that for a player in the position he was in was a fairly bold thing to do. And even just going back to, I think, one of his early years in the organization was one of the first times that I went down to Port St. Lucie on behalf of Amazing Avenue to check things out, take a lot of pictures and all that. And just the interaction with him and that experience, just a friendly, seemingly down to earth guy, in a context where that's not always the case. So very likable player and person from everything that, we've seen, that we've all seen. And for me, that brief interaction in a spring training many years ago when he was 18 and I was probably 28, roughly.
Do you remember him? You and I were on the field at spring training in 2020, and you were trying to get a picture of him, and somebody walked in front of him or something, and he paused and then did like the California "What's up" symbol for you, very purposely paused so you get the picture, and then kind of waved at us as he was walking off the field. And yeah. I very much appreciated that in that moment as well.
Yeah. So just look, we're not around the team all the time. We don't have that level of access that we really know Dom Smith. But in the limited capacity that we got to interact, it's always been very positive and good. And I don't want to think that his best work as a major league hitter is behind him. It's just tough to see that turnaround coming when the last 2 years were what they were. But hey, it is a player leaving the Mets. And as much as I'd like everybody's overall perception and approach to change, I could still totally see an unexpected bump in his productivity from a change of scenery, from going anywhere else and getting a chance to play. I assume he's going to want to end up in a place. I haven't looked at the Pirates roster, but just an example of a team that is probably not going to be any good and might be able to give him some playing time. Or a team that's like that, a non-contender, get some reps, get that major league time instead of being stuck in Syracuse. And I hope it works out for him, because he truly was blocked. And at this point, unless they make further upgrades at designated hitter, Vogelbach is better at that role than Dom is.
Yep.
So I understand the decision. It definitely makes me a little bit sad. And if I had to bet one way or the other, I'd say he's probably not going to make the Mets regret it. But crazier things have happened in baseball. So
yeah,
it is possible.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the ones that hurts from just a likability standpoint. Like, you know, all of us were rooting for Dom for a number of reasons. And I think that this is a situation where if he does come back to bite the to bite the team in terms of being a really effective player for somebody else, I know I'm not going to be mad at that at all. I'm still rooting for Dom Smith no matter where he goes. There are plenty of Mets that have left that I have felt like, well, you know what? I'm glad I don't have to root for that guy anymore. I don't feel that way about Dom Smith. And so I hope that Dom turns into an excellent player and, you know, makes us regret having him leave, because I just don't see a way that happens for the Mets. I don't see that happens. I don't see how that happens for Dom Smith on the Mets. I just think that if he's going to succeed elsewhere, there are a number of factors that wouldn't be present in Queens for him to have to do that. You know, whether it's just a matter of playing time or, you know, organizational attitude about him or whatever the case may be. So yeah, fare thee well, Dom Smith. We hope that you come back and are really impressive, because that will be fun for everybody. Do you have any strong thoughts on Sean Reed Foley being non-tendered?
No real strong thoughts. I think I was all in on him early when he got those first major league innings with the Mets. In what was that, just 2021?
Was it?
Hold on, let's see. I know we saw him in spring training in 2020.
Yes.
Wait, no, we didn't.
We didn't?
We couldn't have.
I thought we did too. I have a very... I could have sworn we did.
Who the hell did we talk to? It was somebody else.
Oh, we didn't talk to him. I know that.
Oh, okay.
We talked to... Was it Kevin Smith?
No, who was the guy who was reading Don Quixote? For some reason,
yeah, no, I thought that was Sean Reed. No, it wasn't Sean Reed Smith. I forget who that was now, too. Man, we should know this. This was we recorded an interview about this.
Yeah, that's the thing that happened.
Amazing Avenue, Don Quixote. It was Riley Gilliam.
Yeah. Okay, well, conflated those two. I believe both mustachioed.
Yes.
Both have R's in their initials.
Yeah. No, I could have sworn we saw Sean Reed Foley in 2020, but you're right. He was traded in 2021 to the Mets. He was part of the Steven Matz trade.
Yes. So, So I guess my initial memory was right. When he first came up in 2021, I was all in on this bizarre stance on the mound while he took his signs, and he had some good early results. And then he put up a 5+ ERA by the end of his still limited work. And then in 2022, his ERA was over 5 again. and then he has Tommy John surgery. So I think it's probably more about clearing up a spot on the 40-man roster for the winter than anything else. But I do hope he ends up back on a minor league deal, just because I don't know why. Maybe he'll make it, and you get attached to players even when they don't give you a whole lot of reason to, when they play for your team.
Yeah.
So if he can rehab his way back and see what he's got in Syracuse at some point next summer, great.
Yeah. A couple of notes on Sean Reed Foley. First of all, if I hadn't just looked this up, if you had asked me how many appearances has Sean Reed Foley made in major league games for the Mets, I would have guessed so much higher than 19. He's only appeared in 19 major league games for the Mets, which is crazy.
Yeah. I think that look on the mound just multiplies how much he's in our memories. Because how many pitchers who have made 19 appearances or fewer for the Mets do we remember?
Right. And between his major dad mustache and like his weird delivery, and I believe he has a lot of tattoos, right? In my mind's eye, he has a lot of tattoos. Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So everything about him is kind of striking. But like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they bring him back on a minor league deal, and I would support that move. But yeah, it just seems like a 40-man situation here. You want to have as much space in the 40-man as necessary going into the Rule 5 draft and winter meetings and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. But again, if this is the end of Sean Reed Foley, we'll always have those couple of games he looked really good, and you and I went all in on him. I remember there's a podcast somewhere where you and I like really were extolling the virtues of Sean Reed Foley. time has proved us wrong on that so far, but that's okay.
I have no regrets. What's the point of being a fan if you can't occasionally be irrational about supporting somebody who's on your team?
Especially as a Mets fan, where I feel like there are some times where you really need that hope, right? And in 2021 there was a lot going wrong with the Mets when he came up, and I concur. Let's be irrational now and then. So in addition to those two players saying goodbye to the Mets added a number of sort of fringy arms, I guess I'll call them. They claimed two players off of waivers from rivals. They claimed William Woods off of off waivers from the Braves. They claimed Steven Ridings, I think it's Ridings is how it's pronounced, off waivers from the Yankees. They traded the Marlins Franklin Sanchez, who was one of their not ranked by Mason Avenue in terms of prospects, of prospects of note. So they traded a non-prospect essentially to the Marlins for Eliezer Hernandez and Jeff Brigham, and they also signed to minor league deals Zach Munkenhorn and Denny Reyes yesterday, or Wednesday rather. So that's, 2-4. That's 6 pitchers who probably are not going to be stars for the Mets, but all provide a lot of depth, and all will probably spend some or all of the year in the minor leagues. But these are the type of guys that the Mets, and we've said this last offseason a bit too, these are the types of moves that the Mets just didn't make under previous ownership and previous management to bring in just a glut of guys. And in spring training or in Syracuse or wherever, you just sort of see if anybody has anything, and you exploit that once that presents itself. The only name on this list that I was sort of super familiar with was Eliezer Hernandez, who has both started and come out of the bullpen for the Marlins. He is certainly not like an all-star caliber player, but he has good stuff, and he can occasionally be an effective strikeout pitcher. And again, this seems like a move for he's probably going to be the Mets' 7th starter this year, right? He'll be in the minors, and he will be working out and will come up for a doubleheader or if there's a couple of injuries. But, I'm not particularly enthused about any of these moves. Although Jeff Brigham, Brigham, no N in there. Brigham is kind of an interesting reliever. He had a really good season last year for the Marlins in very limited time. But, you know, he had a 1.22 ERA plus in his shortened 2022 season. So, you know, he might be a piece for the bullpen, and because there is so much bullpen to rebuild, this is certainly a good way to begin that process.
Yeah. And look, you get guys who have that sort of experience in the major leagues, varying levels of success, but still definitely some of it, and options remaining, and you get them for very little return because of the circumstances under which the Marlins were letting them go. Great. Two arms who cannot hurt to have in the organization. And when you non-tender a couple guys and have a lot of spots on the 40-man roster open, it makes it a lot easier to make that kind of a move, which is a good thing. Obviously, we hope the Mets acquire a bunch of players to fill all of their needs, most of which are on the pitching side of the roster. And then they might have to make some more spots on the 40-man roster. But for now, it's the kind of thing you want to see the team doing. I hope they sign a bunch of great players before the Rule 5 draft even happens. But when it gets to that point, if they haven't, I want them to take somebody in that too, because why not?
Right.
If you don't hold on to them, it's $25,000, which is not even a blip on anything Steve Cohen has ever done over the last decade or more.
He undoubtedly has spent that much on a night out.
Oh, yeah, without question.
You know, so, yeah, who cares?
Yeah, so, bring in fringe guys as much as you can, and then if you have to either DFA or deal them in an effort to clear space on the roster for somebody else who's clearly better, then so be it. That's fine. But
did they even add any of these guys to their 40-man roster?
I believe they had to with those two, right? Hernandez certainly would be on there. Let's just double check. Yeah.
William Woods, Jeff Brigham. Yeah, they're all on there. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the way that they got them, they kind of...
Steven Ridings, yeah, okay.
So, yeah. That being said, I encourage everybody to read my annual rundown of free agent relief pitchers, because the Mets still need a lot of them. Even if Brigham is a really good get and can replicate what he did last year for the Marlins over the course of a full season for the Mets next year and beyond, that would still probably line him up to be the third best reliever on the team after Drew Smith and Edwin Diaz.
Right.
So we'd very much like to see the Mets do more. Hopefully John Curtis comes back and after missing this year, recovering from Tommy John surgery, the Mets decided to keep him for next year, which was the whole point of signing him in the first place while he was rehabbing. He's got a pretty decent track record too. So if he's healthy, he could maybe be a fourth arm and you can start to see a bullpen taking shape, but would very much prefer that they bring in a few more. There's no such thing as a sure thing, I guess, in a bullpen, but surer things.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I would think they have to sign at least two relievers with serious major league experience. I would
guys we've heard of, guys who have at least once or twice put up ERAs under 3.
Right. Maybe this is us being optimistic about that, but I think at least two of those guys will fall into the Mets' lap at some point. And let's hope they do, because they could certainly use those type of players on the team right now.
Hey, you've got all kinds of people yelling at you about sales, Black Friday, and Cyber Week these days. So I'll keep this short. Get the lowest prices of the season on an annual subscription to New York Magazine, now through November 30th. Prices start at $8 for a monthly digital subscription and top out at $45 for a year of print and digital access. Give yourself the gift of Vulture, The Cut, Intelligencer, and all your favorite New York Magazine brands for up to 75% off until the end of the month. Go to nymag.com/holiday by November 30th, and you will get the best deal of the year.
And the last bit of news isn't really news right now, which is that Jacob deGrom is still a free agent. However, it seems like with the Rangers going after Carlos Rondon and the Braves supposedly balking at the price that deGrom is asking for, it seems like maybe he's going to fall back into the Mets' lap, which I think was always the most likely option anyway. I know people like to talk a lot about how he was definitely going to walk and never come back to the Mets, which I always felt was a real misrepresentation of what he was saying whenever asked about this. I think he's going to wind up ending his career as a Met. I think it makes the most sense for everybody in this instance for him to end his career as a Met. And so I think that's going to happen. And yeah, any thoughts on that, Chris? Do you share my optimism in that, or are you still thinking he may go elsewhere?
I think I'm with you in thinking that he is going to stick around and that the team can find a way to make that work for them. I know there are some draft penalties to being way, way over the luxury tax over an extended period of time. I don't necessarily think those penalties would rob an organization of success because they're not that heavy. Especially if you're a competitive team and you're picking later in the first round and later in every round on an annual basis. The Mets should not have an approach that they need to tank and get Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg in back-to-back drafts. The equivalent of that should not happen anymore. It shouldn't even be an entertained thought.
Right.
Yeah. What was my point? Steve Cowan's money. Right. So yeah, DeGrom. And it's weird to, I think because of all the weird injuries and missing a calendar year, it's a little easier to think about the end of his career. And yeah, that could be something that happens with his next contract, depending on how many years it's signed for. He will turn 35 in June next year, which is sort of a big number. But yeah, health is obviously the biggest thing here. But if he can stay relatively healthy, I could see him pitching for several more years. But if this contract gets him to a point that you'd say, all right, maybe the one after it is his last one. Or maybe the one after it, you get to a point that it's sort of like Clayton Kershaw with the Dodgers.
Right, right.
Where, and Kershaw is younger, even though he's been around much longer. Well, is he younger? No, slightly older. Sorry. I should have that right. But a situation like Kershaw where he's been a free agent now, I think, what, after last season he had free agency, he's a free agent again this year, and it's at a point that either he's going to sign some sort of contract with the Dodgers or he's going to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a rare and unique thing, but for the sake of baseball, I hope Kershaw keeps coming back. I mean, you hate to see guys who are that good hanging up, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I do think I'm with you. I think DeGrom will be in a Mets uniform next year. And I just hope that it gets to that point that it would be like, no, he would never leave. Of course not, you know, especially when, and I know the Mets season sort of went out on a very quick note. that having the division slip away by the slimmest of margins at the end and exiting the playoffs quickly, that all felt like it happened so fast. But while they were having a 101-win season, while they were in the playoffs, no other team got that treatment. And we talked about it at the time. there were more words written about who their pending free agents were and how Jacob DeGrom was going to be on the Braves. I mean, after game one of the World Cup on the Wild Card series, I was on the subway and one Mets fan was like, "Oh, DeGrom's already a Brave." I'm like, "Oh my God, can we maybe see what happens tomorrow and then the day after that, and then maybe worry about it when we get to that point." And now we are not that far removed, time wise, from that game one wild card loss, and there is absolutely no notion that the Braves are even involved, that they'd be willing to spend that kind of money on any single player. Anything can happen, but there was this foregone conclusion that he was going to leave and go to Atlanta, and they're not even in the mix based on everything we've heard up to this point.
Yeah. So
just another reminder to wait for news to happen before you react to it, at least in baseball. Probably a good thing in all parts of life, but especially with sports.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and we should mention there's a really well-written piece by two of our writers, Vass and Lucas, which came out on it was Tuesday or Wednesday this week, which basically compares it's like a point counterpoint on whether the Mets should re-sign DeGrom, and it's a really good read, and I think both make very valid points for their positions on that. And so if you haven't read that, please check it out and do that. It's very, very fun. I think that's pretty much it in terms of Mets news for now. We are, we're keeping this every other week schedule, which lines us up, I think, nicely for the winter meetings, doesn't it? Isn't that not next week, but the week after?
I believe so. That's when it usually would be. I should probably know that.
I should probably know that too, but I think that lines up properly. So you'll hear from us again after the winter meetings. But if anything big happens in between there, we might pop in for a quick little emergency podcast or something. But until then, what would you say was your music pick for this week?
So I'm keeping my streak of bands that played at Desert Days this year going. I've not been one to avoid picking bands I've picked before, and this is another example of that. It is not another King Gizzard record, though, even though they put out 3 in October and I could go that route, but...
And they did that KEXP session, which you said was as good as a record, essentially.
Yeah, no. If you enjoyed, now granted, the record I recommended last week was a different one than the one they highlighted at their most recent KEXP session. But if you enjoy any of what you've heard from King Gizzard, definitely check out their latest stop at the studios of KEXP. I know Amel and the Sniffer stopped there recently too, and so did OC's. So as always, that stuff is just incredible what they're able to get bands to come in and do and record. But the Desert Days related pick this week, it may have been my favorite set of the whole festival. I'd never seen them before. Fuzz. I had recommended one of their other records quite a while ago. Ted Berg was a guest on that episode, I remember, and we talked about it, and he was shocked to hear the band still recorded live in the studio, like the previous album mm-hmm. I had recommended from Fuzz, but they did. But this one is just their self-titled record. It was the first one they put out, and songs off of that they played, they did a Levitation session during the pandemic, like the first year or so of the pandemic, that featured a bunch of the songs too. So the live set at Desert Days was similar in terms of which songs were played, and just so, so good. And as a refresher, Ty Siegel is on drums and vocals in this band. And I honestly think, at least in that live context, and you can hear it on the records too, his drumming is as good as his guitar playing, which is just kind of incredible to think about.
He's a regular Jay Maskus in that way.
Yeah, which is appropriate as I'm set to see Dinosaur Jr. again for like the third time this year. Wow, that's But anyway, Fuzz. Earth and Gate is really good. What's in My Head is just really catchy, heavy rock. It's the best way I can put it. And I have to say, in general, naming a band Fuzz, pretty bold. and they pull it off. It's exactly, if you know the band name and the general type of music, you know what you're getting into. It's very much Black Sabbath influenced rock. And it's so well done. And then, so that set was great. This album is great. And the icing on the cake was that Ty and Charles Muthart played solo acoustic sets recently in Brooklyn. So 2/3 of Fuzz were there playing in a format that you don't usually see, each of their own songs. That neither one played any Fuzz songs acoustic, because I don't know if that would work.
Yeah.
but that is my long-winded latest recommendation from the Ty Siegel tree of music that I recommend that you check out.
Very nice. So a friend of mine had hit me to this thing that is being done online. There's a book that has come out a couple of times in a few editions called 1001 Albums You Have to Hear Before You Die, or You Should Hear, whatever it's called. But it's 1001 Albums You Should Hear Before You Die. And somebody created an online generator for it where every day if you sign up, it will give you a random record. And it keeps track of it based on your like login, so that if you do this for 1001 days, you will get to hear all the 1001 records from that book. And while I try to listen to a lot of new music, I also have a lot of blind spots. Like everybody, I get really annoyed when somebody claims that they like, you know, that they can't find new music, new stuff to listen to. And I don't even mean new as in like released in 2022. I mean just new to you. So I'm always up for listening to more music. And so I've been doing this every day. I'm on day 25 or 26 right now, 25. And some of the records I've been very familiar with, like today's was Sticky Fingers by the Rolling Stones for me. And I've heard Sticky Fingers many times, right? But every now and then you hear a record by a band that you knew but didn't know that album, or you'll get something brand new tossed at you. And so it's always kind of fun to just, you know, get these daily recommendations of stuff to listen to. And the other day I got a recommendation from an artist I enjoy, but an artist with a huge discography that I have not heard everything from, because there are just so many records. And that artist is Fela Kuti, the African saxophonist, singer, songwriter, political figure, polygamist. I'm trying to think of other words to describe Fela. But he is the sort of the pioneer of what they call Afrobeat music, which I absolutely love, which is jazz that gets very repetitive and almost trance-like at times, because it's just they lock in a groove and it goes on for a very long time. The record that was in that book, and maybe there's more than one in that book, I have purposely not sought out what records are in there, just so every day it's a bit of a surprise. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to get Sgt. Pepper's one day, right? But like, so this is called Live. It's a 1971 Fela record, and it features Cream drummer and Blind Faith drummer Ginger Baker on two songs, which is really fun because Ginger Baker's a great drummer, and having him sit in with them for the second side of the record, of the vinyl disc, tracks 3 and 4, is fantastic. And if you listen to it digitally, there's a bonus track that's a drum solo between Ginger Baker and Fela's drummer Tony Allen, who is, again, another incredible drummer. And it's like 16 minute drum battle between the two of them, but it's not like showy, and you don't get the sense that they're trying to one up each other. They're really trying to groove together, and there is not a track on this shorter than 8 minutes. Most of the tracks are in the 12 to 13 minute range. They're all long, they're all hypnotic, and they're all just really great. So if you have any interest in jazz or in funk or in just, you know, music with a heavy groove, I think Fela is like an undeniable presence. But this live record was actually a great place to begin. So Fela Kuti Live from 1971 featuring Ginger Baker. That would be my recommendation for this week. And Chris, are you a Fela guy? Have you ever listened to some Fela Kuti?
Yeah. And I'm ashamed to admit that I don't know the discography as well as I should.
There's so much of it, though. It's hard.
Yeah. His son, Sayan Kuti, was at Desert Days. So there you go. Oh, nice. You made a related pick without even knowing it.
Yeah.
And played music very much in his father's style. And yeah, I need to listen to more of his, because Antibalas out of Brooklyn they play his style of music, and they play it really well. And I love listening to their records. And he was hands down the biggest influence on that band's sound. So yeah, definitely a fan of the style. And I will take your recommendation to actually listen to the originator of it more.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's good stuff. He is a fascinating and probably problematic person in a lot of reasons. But in terms of his musical output, I mean, look, I don't want to paint him as all of a bad brush. He did a lot of very important political things in his lifetime, but he also, you know, there was some not cool stuff. Specifically, it seems like his relationship with women might be a problem. But you know, these things happen, and we can't. I heard a great phrase recently, or I heard someone say, "You can't be on every jury," and I enjoy that phrase. You can't be on every jury. You can't decide every single thing about every single person. And so, you know, I love Fela's music. I don't know enough about him to make definitive statements about his personal life. I don't know why I'm making such a big deal out of this. Listen to Fela Kuti live. Anyway, thank you for listening. We're very, very happy to have you with us through the off season and beyond. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com, where you can find all sorts of Mets news and information. Hopefully there'll be some real Mets news to talk about soon, because it's been a minute since we've had that. And go to Amazing Avenue. You can find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can find this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts, you can find us. Chris is on Twitter for now. Are you still on Twitter, or are you off?
I am still on.
Okay, yes. Well, we're both still on Twitter for now. He is a Chris McShane. I'm Brian Isenap. And until next time, let's go Mets.